Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 116 of the EP Castorelli podcast. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Emilson, and joining me, we have my co-host, Namoli.
Hello.
And this week, if you're watching live, we are about 2.5 hours early because yes. It is Father's Day in the U.S., and I have family stuff this afternoon.
Yeah, for once it's you with the family issues, or not issues, but conflicts, and not me. So
yeah. So yeah, that's happening today, but that's not WoW stuff. What is WoW stuff though is Jailer, which we are both still progressing on. How is that going?
It's going. It's a slog, I'll say, particularly for us is P1 is kind of a slight issue, I'll say, just with consistency. So we're wiping a lot to honestly the jump in the hole mechanic. And so for us, it's like either people go in the wrong holes, kill someone, don't get into their hole in time because they're worried about either being on the boss or they misposition themselves. They can't get to like a far hole. And explode on the raid, and then that damage eventually kills someone whenever the next damage event comes out, like Torment or the Blood Soak lines and things like that. So a little bit of inconsistent in P1, but did get to see fairly deep in P2. We got through basically, I don't know percentage-wise, we got through essentially 2 Blood Soaks in P2 with generally almost everyone alive. I think we're down maybe 2 or 3 people. We're making some progress, but that was maybe 2-3 pulls this week. So it's rough, I'll say.
Yeah. It's rough. I would say we're in kind of a similar boat. We do still have a raid tonight. But phase one was definitely our albatross on Friday. We spent a lot of time wiping to exactly the same thing that you described. It's really really, really annoying thing about this fight. If you fall off or for whatever reason, you know, you die somewhere where you fall into the hole or you get knocked off, anything like that, you respawn at the entrance to the room.
Yeah.
Your body does. And that effectively means you can't be rezzed for like 3 minutes.
To make it all the way around that circle. Yeah.
So our healers, we didn't have too many issues with our healers today, but we lost like 3 pulls where like a healer got yeeted off the edge. or got mind controlled and then Ring of Peace into a hole.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Where they fell, died, and respawned at the entrance. and that's pretty bad. Like, there's a lot of damage that goes out. Yeah. So just between that and like when it happens to someone that's supposed to do one of the blood soak lines, and then suddenly your blood soak line is like missing a link. It's like we have an extra in there in phase one, so it's usually okay, but sometimes not, because sometimes that extra person is doing other things.
Yeah. Like,
recovering from getting a bomb.
One of the problems with that fight is just it's so, not that it's tightly tuned, I'd say, but like one mistake early on, like there's no there's generally limited recovery options to like a mistake.
It's
early
very
on.
Rippy. It's very, very rippy. It reminds me of like I think I mentioned this previously, but there's a Brew Lounge FC in Final Fantasy. And back before Endwalker released, or no, not even Endwalker, whatever the Shadowbringers released, we were doing low level trials with Brew Lounge people with eye level sync on and everything. And one of the ones that we worked on was Titan, which if you're not familiar with Final Fantasy, you can just like chain res people over and over and over. There's no cooldown, but it is like an 8-second cast that you have to do mid combat, and it leaves you the damage and it leaves you like a stat debuff kind of like the not as severe as the res sickness in WoW, but it's pretty significant if you're trying to be the damage check.
Yeah.
But on Titan, if you get knocked off, you can't be rezzed at all.
God.
That's what this reminds me of. We've had our resto druid like do some hero plays and go back and like rez somebody that died. Uh-huh. And like sometimes it works out, but sometimes, you know, they just like get a bomb as they're running back from that. And then that explodes on the raid.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no recovery there.
Yeah. I would say the other issue that we had that came up is I got a bit too greedy with the Invoke Niazhao shenanigans. I saw the bright lights last week. I got 700k damage from Invoke Niazhao in my opener, which is pretty significant. I was nearly top DPS for like a minute, 2 minutes into the fight, because it's like that's just more damage than most brews get on their invoke over the whole fight, and I got it in the first 30 seconds. And we moved our bloodlust from on pull where it was to I think phase four is where we're planning to do it now, but it's not on pull is the point. And it turns out that was very, very significant for my ability to do those shenanigans. Following the brewmaster Adej, a little haste is bad, a lot of haste is very good, actually. Same reason we like high tolerance but don't gear for haste. Turns out when you're just getting a ton of it, especially if you're tanking the jailer during bloodlust, you get a lot of value.
Yeah.
So I have had to pull back on that one. So I'm getting like 350 to 400K, maybe.
Oh, only.
Only that, yeah. Which is still not bad. It's just like, I definitely cost us a few pulls to being too greedy. And that's always, it feels bad. Especially because I'm always the one that's like, don't be greedy, guys. Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's going to be a while till I live that one down.
Yeah, that's funny. Are you having any sort of like attendance issues coming up with, like, because that's one thing our guild's going through is like over the next 4 weeks we have at least 1 to 2 people out with like the second week of July I think we have 3 or 4 people out, meaning like luckily the nerfs came in now because we literally have until the second week of July to kill it or we're taking 2 weeks off of raiding. And then
It's not that bad for us. We do have a bunch of people that are going to be out, but we were able to plan around it for the most part. I don't remember the date. There is a point where we're going to like have our mage out of town, right? So we'd be doing it without a mage because we only have one. We've been trying to recruit one unsuccessfully for like a month and a half now. there's some stuff like that, but we have been able to mostly plan around it. So the 20 that we have in right now, we have like a month of just runway. They're like, we could take a month to kill this boss. And as long as we kill it within the next month, we're okay. If it takes longer than that, we're going to have attendance issues.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have that luxury. We actually like, cause with me, I go on vacation next week and then we have like another healer out the week after that. It's funny, our healing roster is actually the issue where we're basically juggling, you know, for the 5 healing spots, it's like 7 healers. And 2 of those are off spec, which is fun. So it's we're not in the best position.
One of our warlocks is out right now. We actually have a warrior out on Friday. Oh, gotcha. Never mind. I need to read the note. It's not out. It is, quote, 5 minutes late, possibly. So, and then after that, it's like, it's people that we don't have in right now because we know they're going to be gone the last couple weeks of Prague. Yeah. And then it's July. Like, July 1st, we have a couple people out, but they're not in on Prague. And then July 22nd, one of the healers that we have that's in on Prague is out.
Gotcha. That's not too bad. Yeah, you guys dodged it mostly, which is good.
Yeah, we had our healer shenanigans on Anduin, so.
Yeah, gotcha. Oh, man. All right, well, I mean, luckily, we'll talk about the nerfs here in a bit. But yeah, luckily with the nerfs coming in, maybe we'll progression won't be as long as we think it'll be. So
it's already been long enough, that's for sure. Babs was doing some looking yesterday, I guess. And let me see if I can find it. He had pulled up how long it took the midweek team. I should just search. Oh, search from Babylonius. Done some looking on the midweek team, like when they had killed it, how many kills there were, that kind of thing. Yeah, so here it is. So as of yesterday, it was 101 days since Sepulchre Mythic release, okay? The OE midweek team took 63 days to clear Sanctum of Domination, 96 days to clear Castle Nathria.
Okay.
And on day 101 of those, there were 236 Sylvanas kills in the United States region, and 158 Sire Denathria skills in the in the North America region. There are 58 Jailer kills.
Yeah. Oh man, this tier. Yeah,
it's gone on, and that is why we are getting the nerfs, which we will get to in greater detail in a minute. But there's a lot. It's kind of become a running joke that they like keep nerfing. Like, how many WoWhead posts have there been that are just titled "More Major Nerfs to Sepulchre of the First Ones"?
Yeah, yeah, and I actually put in, and maybe we'll link in the show notes, we'll talk about this later, but I put in, somebody on Reddit compiled a list of every nerf to every boss.
I saw and, like, that. It's crazy. We're definitely, so those of you that are listening, we'll go through a little bit of it, but if those of you that are watching, it's getting pulled up on stream, because that thing is extensive.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's not sort of beat around the bush a little bit. Let's sort of move forward, and we can talk about what happened last week, which isn't much, and then we'll get into that main topic, which is, I think, the nerfs, and then we wanted to also talk a little bit about how we feel Faded will play out in terms of once that's live and some of the older raids, like, you know, Sire, or what, Castle, and Sanctum. So so a couple sort of newsworthy items. First up, Blizzard responded to a couple of posts in the forums around Voidform. And the fact that, and some accessibility around that, meaning if you don't know, Voidform is a priest ability when they're shadow. And basically when they speak in Voidform, they speak in, I don't know if it's like void language.
It's called Shathiar, according to the Blue Post.
Okay. So they speak in that language. And the issue is that if you are like a guild that doesn't use voice comms, or you use say to mean certain things, basically just comes out as gibberish to everybody else. And so like the idea is they're looking into maybe getting rid of that sort of flavor. It's cool flavor. I think, who else does it? Warlock used to do it. I think if you curse of tongue someone in PvP, they'll speak.
Yeah.
In sort of demonic. And there's also another warlock. I think it's in Metamorphosis. They'll speak in demonic too. So
used to, cause they don't have that anymore.
They don't met anymore. That's true. But in any event, this is sort of some flavor text that Blizzard looks to be changing for more accessibility from a game perspective, which
cool. So the reason say in particular matters, like this doesn't happen in party chat or in raid chat, but party chat and raid chat don't produce speech bubbles, which are actually like budget friendly nameplates, basically is how people use them. So, you know, all the say weak auras that like say who is doing what mechanic, or you're trying to coordinate things, then you see people running around with like their say above their head, and you know, okay, I need to watch out for that person, or I need to do this thing to that person. When it's in Shathiar, it's a little bit harder to interpret that.
To know exactly what they're saying,
So the thing that they're currently looking at is changing it so that Voidform doesn't make you speak in Shathiar by default, but then adding a glyph to turn that back on. Yeah. So by default, you get the, and I do think this is the good way to go about it, like making the default the accessible one, and then you can opt into the flavor of having it speak in Shathiar.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't think it's really been an issue for my guild to have the Shadow Priest speak in Shathiar, because most of the say weak auras are accompanied by some kind of diagram weak aura or something similar to indicate, you know, like on the jailer, we have the whole diagram that shows where you go. So even if there's a say over your head saying back left or something, it doesn't, like, you can function without that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But this is a nice little, you know, sort of accessibility change for the game. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. What else they'll sort of maybe expand that to, though. Next up is Wowhead, little Wowhead update. They've released their Dragonflight talent calculators. So for Druids and Death Knights, they now have a talent calculator available for you to mess around with. There was another one, another website put out a calculator too. So now if you care about sort of clicking buttons and seeing how they'll sort of flesh out, Wowhead has a talent calculator for you. The ability to share too, like, and all that fun stuff with like their other talent calculators for, you know, like live and classic and stuff like that. So works out pretty well. It works like a Wowhead talent calculator. So It is a nice little addition. Yeah, you can not take anything for bone shield generation as a Blood Death Knight. Be real good.
Yes. I did actually spend a little bit of time. Let's swap back to the right view. I did spend a little bit of time going through it again and like seeing what you could get. Like, what would I do at level 60 as a Blood DK or a Guardian Druid to kind of get a feel for what was going to be locked off by that last 10 levels? And you can just still do some pretty interesting things at level 60. So that's going to be...
That should be fun.
It's going to be nice.
Should be fun. So yeah, so that's talent calculators are in. And then one final non sort of retail item is Blizzard put up a big post around the classic realm consolidation. So if you guys play, you know, any sort of classic, TBC classic or stuff like that, Blizzard put out a post a couple weeks ago about how they're consolidating a bunch of realms just from a population perspective. And if you look at classic realm population, there's essentially like four realms, you could say. And the way it breaks out is there's two alliance realms and two horde realms where you have a population over essentially 10,000 active users, right? So Blizzard, what they ended up doing, they realized this, that some realms have maybe a couple hundred people playing at one time, which isn't really healthy for the game. They're going to consolidate those realms into larger, basically building almost super servers or super realms, whatever you want to call it. And a bunch of people had some questions about it. And sort of a couple of questions around like why certain realms weren't included. Blizzard essentially has their own internal metric that isn't widely known. They call it daily average world population. They built a threshold metric based on that, which is, you know, I think the right way to do it. And then also talked a little bit about like what happens to your guild. It's, by the way, it's dead. It doesn't actually transfer. The only thing Blizzard's transferring is the actual character. So like if you have a guild with a guild bank, that's gone. So you should put that on a character before this happens. And also they talk about the fact that like the actual character, if you wait until the forced migration happens, that character can be inaccessible for up to 2 weeks, which only affects the characters moving. The actual server you're going to, if you already have a character there, you can easily use that one. But put up a huge post about answering a ton of questions around this. Which is, I think it's good for Classic, but kind of sucks for you as a player if you had a server identity and now that goes away.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that for the very low population realms, it's difficult to really form a server identity because you're really the only ones there. Like, you got a guild, maybe two. You know, speaking in terms of like Classic and even TBC Classic raid sizes, if you're dealing with only a few hundred people actively playing, then there's actually like a very small limit on the number of distinct guilds there can be that raid.
Exactly. With 25 people raid sizes, right? Like there's not a lot of like overlap or, you know, definitely need some more population. So, I think it's good for at least the game, the longevity of it. I actually started leveling my hunter again, in TBC Classic, discarded the shaman because I was like, I'm not gonna do that. But
did you start from scratch or did you boost to 58 again?
No, I started from scratch. So doing that thing. I think I'm like level 30 or so.
Nice.
It's not bad. It's funny. The only reason I'm doing it is because of Wrath Classic and the fact that when Wrath Classic launched, I was going to be a hunter. Like, that was my main. Literally until the day of launch, when we had a couple people in the guild that we thought we were going to heal or run a certain class, like, essentially quit. So we ended up with, like, a raiding roster of, like, two healers. So I was like, well, I have a druid that's whatever the max level was. I guess I'll play Resto Druid for the first couple tiers. So swapped literally, like, last second.
And here you are 10 years later.
Going back. I'm gonna make that hunter. I'm going to be that hunter. But, yeah, no, it's been fun to just sort of chill. It's been, like, it's nice to be able to jump in, maybe do, like, two or three quests with my current schedule. It's not, I don't get a ton of time, but jump in, do a couple things and then jump out. So
I've been still slowly leveling up my rogue. I'm almost to the Burning Crusade zones.
Oh, nice. So
I am maybe unlike with Classic and TBC, maybe going to hit level cap before the release of Wrath of the Lich King Classic.
Yeah, it's going to be a struggle. Although, for me,
the realm that I want, I may need to use one of those free character transfers because it's ended up being one of the dead realms. So
gotcha. Yeah, I ended up rolling on Fairlina, which I think is the, if not the largest Horde server, like one of the two larger ones. So, because of course I went Horde. Like,
of course, why not? Of course. I don't remember which server I'm on, and it actually may just be that, like, there's no alliance on it too. Like, it may not be an underpopulated server. It may just be like a Horde only server.
That's true. Yeah.
Because my rogue is blood elf, so that should be fine. I keep thinking I'm playing alliance because that's what my druid is, but yeah.
Gotcha.
Maybe it's fine. I don't know. I'm gonna have to find it out.
Yeah, check it out.
that would be annoying.
Yeah. Yeah, if there was nobody at max level, that would be rough. Cool. So then two final things before we get into the raid nerfs is there's a couple of hot fixes to Helandris. Which I feel like these were a long time coming. So if you don't know, Helandris, after last week's patch, basically the planet cracker beams and bombs in phase three were invisible to your raid. So like you get to phase three, the planet cracker beams, which are the beams that come down and rotate and basically cordon off sections, don't actually have a visual. And they still kill you, they still do damage, but there's no visual for them. That was known actually on the patch release, and they didn't fix this until the 15th. So, or at least they tried to put in their first fix a couple days later after that. And sort of it felt like it took a while to get these out there. So they initially pushed something for the beams, and then I think it was the next day or 2 days later, they pushed something for the bombs because they fixed them basically in two different hot fixes. That's super. I wonder, like, how does that happen? Like, a random patch, just all of a sudden, bosses' stuff becomes invisible. Like, it's so weird. But but in any event,
if you've done it on like Heroic since then, or like in the interim where it was invisible, it was also applying to Heroic. This was not a Mythic only issue. Yeah. If you angled your camera a certain way, you could still see them.
Oh, okay.
So it was like some rendering glitch. I had been told that if you swapped back from DX12 to DX11, that it worked.
Okay.
But I didn't actually test that, so that's just hearsay. But yeah, it's some change they made to how things are rendered that just made those invisible.
That's crazy. But and it felt like it was live. It was an issue for a lot longer. Like, it felt like it was an issue for like a week, but I guess it only been a couple days, but still. I know a friend of mine had been progressing on Helandris, did not enjoy this on Tuesday.
This sudden hard mode of phase three.
Exactly. So, that is the bomb fix, visual fixes. So, and then that separate hotfix also fixed the bombs, which is the mythic only mechanic. Now everything should be good to go on old Helandris. So, from a hotfix perspective. So, any other topics? Anything else before we jump into the main stuff for today? So the big for the two topics. Actually, it's funny. The only topic I really had to start that I wanted to start to talk about was we were doing the notes for this week was really just to talk about the faded affix. what we thought, like, are the old raids going to be easier, harder? Like, what's the difficulty curve going to be? We'll eventually talk about that. But I think the big thing we want to talk about is actually yesterday Blizzard sort of threw out their huge nerf list of a bunch of fights that are going to go live with reset this week coming up. So 21st for the US, or sorry, for North America, 22nd for Europe, all this stuff will go live. And it's pretty extensive. So I'll just sort of read through a couple of these, and we'll start with some of the, I guess, the earlier fights going to the later fights. So first up is Lehuvum's actually getting changes. Lehuvum's getting a 15% health reduction on Mythic, which is nice. It shortens the fight up that much more. It's no longer probably a 9-minute fight. Maybe it's a 8.
It's already, so the fastest legit speed kill. So there is a bug on Lyavim that didn't get a hotfix note, but if you like reset the boss and then stood on top of him with some kind of AoE effect before he finished spawning, it would turn off the intermission entirely. Oh. And you would only just, like, phase one would just play on loop for, you know, however long it took you to kill it, which it turns out was like 6.5 minutes.
Okay.
But the fastest legit kills are like 7 to 7.5 minutes. So the existing like 10% health nerf already did a number on the like fight length. Another 15% is, it's pretty substantial.
Yeah. Yeah. So this one, very quick now. Do you think now you cut off a third transition?
Possibly.
And you just do two? You just do two?
With the amount of gear as well?
Yeah.
Possibly.
That wouldn't be too bad. And then the other thing they did was they reduced the Resonant Cascade damage by 90% on Mythic. And so Resonant Cascade is the AoE damage for the intermission. And that's massive.
No, sorry. That's not what that is.
Oh, wait, what is it? I thought that was what it was.
So you know when he does the push-pull? You get those circles on you.
Oh, it's the circle damage.
The damage done by the circle is Resonance Cascade. If you don't have the right color, there's a separate ability that did not get nerfed. It just kills you.
Okay, gotcha.
So you still have to do that mechanic. But what this does is, so before you could stack like 4 people and, you know, it would, that's the most you could do. Now you can effectively like stack the raid, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you can have like a melee stack and a range stack, or like, you know, the tanks do their own thing and the rest of the raid stacks on the boss, you know. So I'm going to just throw this out here. This mechanic was bad. This is another one of those, like, you had to have a weak aura to assign this because of the damage that it dealt. Yeah. You could not have too many people in the same stack. You could not have too few people in the same stack. Like, it was not practically doable without a weak aura on Mythic. Mechanic doesn't exist on Heroic, so it doesn't matter there. But, like, so this means that you don't really need the assignment weak aura anymore.
You're 2 stacks at that point.
We're going to, like, by the time we get back to it, we'll get to see what guilds on farm are doing, whether they've removed the weak aura and they're just kind of YOLOing it.
Yeah.
Or if they're still using it and just taking advantage of the fact that they don't need another healer on the fight now.
Yeah. To heal this?
Maybe.
You could.
Like, that was a significant, like, you remember the push-pull? Like, just chunking the raid, going into the Resonance Cascade, chunking the raid.
Yeah, but there's like, no damage after that, though. Like, that's, I think the...
Right,
the,
you had to heal people up from one into the next, and then you were sailing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so maybe you could two-heal this. That'd be crazy. And then they also increased the cooldown of the Guardian Autonomous Form Sentry Autonomous Mythic difficulty, which... This is basically the cast time to create. It's to like create the things, which maybe it means that they want that you get to split the raid more. So like,
no. Sorry, the Guardian of Atoma, the big ones are like Guardian of the first ones.
Yeah.
When they form when they cast Form Sentry, the thing that does the pulsing AoE damage. It's like I said, this is weird. It's, I guess, going to make the AoE damage in the final phase lower.
Yeah.
But again, like this, so I actually do think it might be a thing to heal this fight, because if you can do like on the in phase one, you do your Resonance Cascade, you just don't use any cooldowns. Like you go straight into the the things, and you're fine. And then after the first intermission, you then use your healer cooldowns to get through the resonance cascades or the push pulls.
Yeah.
And then the third one, you use like personals and then the healer cooldown. And the fourth one, you use your final healer cooldown and you kill the boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you need to three heal this anymore.
That's true. Yeah, you could. I mean, yeah, we'll see what farm happens, but bosses. It didn't do a ton of damage to begin with, other than that sort of you talked about the spikiness, right, between certain abilities, but
yeah, and that'll be interesting. So Abe in chat is saying that Liven was actually a bottleneck boss, and he is correct. It was not a bottleneck boss because of the form sentry. But I definitely had looked at some guilds logs, like people came into, you know, the brew section and were like, what can I do about this boss to help us kill it? And I was like, you can tell your DPS to stop doing like 8K.
Yeah.
Like you can tell your DPS to stop doing tank damage and then maybe you'll kill it. Cause right now you just can't.
Yeah.
Because the boss does have an enrage. It does have a hard enrage at which point it will walk around and punch every single person in your raid. Yeah. The big limiter was the damage check and then the, resonance cascade mechanic. Because the resonance cascade, if you screwed it up, you just lost a quarter of your raid.
Yeah.
And that's unrecoverable.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where that weak ore comes in. So that's funny. Yeah. That's Lahuvum. So yeah, maybe we see two heals of it. That'd be crazy. That'd be fun though.
Abe is saying one heal, but I think Abe is crazy.
Yeah. One might be a little too much, but we'll see. Next up is Helandris. Helandris got more changes after being gutted as a boss. I think we all, when the nerfs came in, the big round of nerfs that increased bomb timing, things like that, I think we killed it the next night after only being about 100 pulls in like 4 or 5 pulls. But Helandris got 2 more nerfs. The aftershock damage has been reduced by 75% on mythic difficulty. Aftershock is the, I don't know ability names, the circles after missile hits, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so after you take a missile hit, there's a circle on the ground. Standing in that typically was a one shot. 75% damage reduction. Yeah. Seems like you can clip one with like a cooldown or something and be okay.
Basically, my read on this is, you know, when you're doing the missiles during the intermission and it's like sometimes just kind of a clusterfuck and you just like have, you would just have circles on all sides of you and you need to use like a movement ability to get out of it. Now, you know, you can like, go, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, and stand in one and live as long as it's only one.
Yeah.
It's not going to be ideal, but it's not going to like kill you.
Yeah, that's true. And then the other change for Helandris is Planet Cracker beam damage has been reduced by 65% and its damage occurs less frequently on Mythic. So again, this seems like something where you can now dip into a Planet Cracker beam and not die and to potentially to run across one, right? Like that was the. Yeah. Like if like right now, one of the things that you wipe fairly often to early in phase 3 is like a orb running to the boss, but it's inside of a planet cracker beam when it gets close. So you have a DPS have to basically make it there, knock it back, and then die. This makes it seem like you can jump through.
I was playing Prop Paladin on this, and I definitely was like on duty to push bubble and go get in that beam and kick the orbs. But it's the Planet Cracker Beam, for those that hadn't done this before on Mythic, ticks every like 0.1 seconds. And it ticks for like half a tank's health. So in 0.3 seconds, this thing has done 100% of your health, procced your cheat, then done another 50% of your health and killed you.
Yeah.
It's a wild amount of damage.
Yeah, it's a ton of damage on the raid. So, on an individual, not on the raid. So yeah, this is it's a nice change for like if you need to make sort of a hero play, right? You get to be able to do that now. Cool. So next up is the Anduin fight. Anduin
getting more, moly.
More and more nerfs.
This is the first ones that aren't just on Mythic too.
Yeah, so they're also for Heroic and other areas. So so first up is Hopelessness and Overconfidence. This is the shadow and light circles around you that you have to run into the same color player. That duration got increased to 16 seconds. It was 12, so you essentially get 4 extra seconds to find your partner, which is good.
Yep.
Along with this is Blasphemy is if you come in contact with someone of the opposite color or previous to this change, someone without a color, you trigger what they call Blasphemy, which is damage around in that circle, essentially kills you and whoever you come in contact with. In Mythic, this doesn't happen in Heroic and below, but in Mythic, if you had the debuff of like the light or shadow debuff and you came in contact with someone without it, you'd actually trigger Blasphemy. They've essentially reverted that on Mythic difficulty. So Blasphemy now no longer triggers when you run over an unmarked player. It will still trigger if you run over a player of an opposite color. But not if you run over an unmarked player, which is nice. It makes that part of it easier on Mythic for sure.
It also is going to make the fight less annoying because it's going to be like, I'm not going to get baited by Sylvanas doing her stupid leap around the platform while we're doing Blasphemy and like making me think I got to dodge somebody that just disengaged or anything like that. It's when it's just an NPC and the NPCs don't and never have triggered it. It's still super annoying. So this is going to be a nice change for that. Cause you can just then ignore the NPCs because they don't have the color on them.
Yeah. So that is a nice change to sort of the Blasphemy mechanic. They've also decreased the damage of March of the Damned by 75% on all difficulties, which is crazy. March of the Damned, of course, are the walls in the intermission phases.
Yes.
They were one shots on Mythic. I mean, now it seems like you can sit and take a couple of these. And
yeah, so I think the idea there is that, I mean, if you take them, it's still a 4-second stun. You very well may die to that 4-second stun. The one shot was not really necessary.
Yes. Makes it a little bit easier. Then we have Soul Explosion. So Soul Explosion is another intermission. This is the little circles that spawn from the little adds in intermission, correct? I believe.
Yeah.
So in the intermission, there's the big ad you have to kill. Sorry.
There's the, I think it's the same puddles in the down phases. Like they look visually the same.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if it's actually the same ability or not.
Yeah. But in any event, Soul Explosion damage and travel speed has been reduced. So now you can hopefully easier dodge the circles on the ground, particularly in the intermission when there's a lot going on. Banished Soul had its cast time increased. What is Banished Soul?
That is the cast of the lost souls when you go down into the Kingsmorn phase.
Gotcha.
So this basically just means that you have more leeway in doing the stuns. With the previous change, you already could do it with just two stuns. Mm-hmm. So this makes it so that you can still do it with two stuns, but it's going to be just easier. It's going to be more lenient. You're not going to run into issues where the cast ends and, you know, someone just, well, you're still going to run into it sometimes, but you're going to run into it less.
And then Necrotic Detonation had its cast time increased by 30% on Mythic difficulty.
That's a big one too. That's the the Abomination ad in the intermission. And that's one of the damage checks is kill the Abomination before it kills you. And this just makes it 30% easier.
Yep. Yeah. That cast technique, it typically starts around 50% health, right? Or like, is it time-based going into it?
It's based on the health when the cast starts. So at 30% health, it starts casting.
Oh, 30. Okay.
So you have to go 30% to zero before it finishes the cast. And a lot of people did call it to swap to it at around 50%. Because there's a delay between people like hearing that and them actually being able to swap to it, right?
Yeah.
So this is just going to make that easier. The whole fight is just completely different now from what the World First Guild's progged. Just completely different.
Yeah. Makes it fun. So next up is Rigelon. Rigelon actually got some changes that are not just health changes, right? He got a slight health nerf last time, but he actually got some mechanic changes, which are fairly big. So two of them, we have Dark Eclipse now targets only 3 players on Mythic difficulty, was 4. Dark Eclipse is that's the bomb debuff where you have to get it and then you run in the hole to hide from the explosion.
This means that you could actually lose one from, you can lose
Quasar Hole.
There's 12 total. So I guess you can kind of, you can lose 1.5 from each Quasar set.
Yeah.
And still not wipe. This is pretty big. That's really big.
Yeah, because in the current way the fight works, if anyone other than a Dark Eclipse target takes a hole, you're screwed. Also, if you kill a Quasar too soon, you could also be screwed because the hole would disappear. However, that was less of a concern with another nerf that let the holes land on the ground longer.
Yeah.
It's pretty big in terms of just, you know, if you have a random person take a hole by accident, it's not a big deal. They also nerfed the unstable matter health by 25%. I'm assuming this was just because you're potentially sending one less person down. The health nerf is in line with that. However, because they didn't nerf the number of Quasars, you still could send an additional person down if you
that
wanted.
That is correct.
You didn't have a bomb.
I feel like that is like, so the other thing this does is you also get to keep one additional person up with each Dark Eclipse set, which is more boss damage because they're not running out, taking a Quasar and then going and hitting the unstable matter. They are now just sitting on the boss and doing boss damage, which is going to be another effective nerf to the boss's health.
Exactly. Yeah, you have one more person, essentially one more full-time DPS person on the boss for the entire fight, basically. So these are, again, some actual nerfs to Rigelon mechanics, which should make the fight a lot easier. Not a lot easier, but, you know, a substantial decrease in difficulty in terms of what you need to do. Then
the jailer
nurse. So there's a lot here. And while I think neither you of I have killed it yet, the nerfs at least that will feel the most are things that I think will help out, particularly being more consistent in sort of P1 and P2. So we'll walk through these a little bit. So first up is Torment damage. Torment is the ability that puts a little circle around you, does AoE damage around you, also does damage to you. Sort of the spread mechanic of the fight. That damage is reduced by 30% on Mythic difficulty. There, at least in P1 and definitely in P2 and P3, there are some nasty overlaps where you get Torment. Actually, the nasty one is Bombs, Torment, and then the Chain Sucking in P1, which is a ton of damage if you clip anything there. So 30% reduction, I mean, essentially means like you can probably clip someone and be fine at this point. Low, but not dead.
And it's also like in phase 3, the strategy is that you stack the torments too deep.
Yep.
Like you have one person stacked on top of another because the adds are immovable. You can't grip them around. So you need them to be stacked so you can kill them. And the way to do that is you hit CDs and you have people stack with the torment. So this is going to make that a little bit safer as well.
Yep. They've also reduced the unholy eruption damage by 30%. This is from P2 onward. After torment goes off, there's a little circle on the ground. So you need to basically, torment hits and you need to move out of your circles. This damage is now also reduced by 30%. So again, I think we lost a couple people to clipping these. So right now it looks like if you have a defensive up, you can take the torment damage and then clip the circle if you have nowhere to run from. So 30% reduction there. A big one, and this one's actually something that we finally got a hold of late in our progression, is Rune of Compulsion absorb reduced by 30%. So Rune of Compulsion is the mind control ability. Basically, that absorb, you have to, you know, do a bunch of damage to the people who are mind controlled, basically break through and absorb. This is that absorb. That's been reduced by 30%. So basically, you need 30% less damage on mind controls to break them out, which, to be fair, is big because you can break them out much sooner.
They still have a ton of, like, the absorbs are still very large.
Yeah.
This is honestly, like, it's a good nerf. It's going to make that less frustrating because the absorbs were so big. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But it is also actually, in a way, just a sneaky, like, DPS buff. Just like you're going to get your, like you said, you're going to get your absorbs broken faster. Yep. And those people are going to go back to DPSing the boss sooner.
Exactly. So yeah.
You're going to kind of reach the point that you've got the mind controls on lock and you can execute that. And now you're just going to get, you know, that extra 5 seconds of boss DPS every set.
Right. That and two. And I think for us, what we found too is that we have like a very specific soak group in that phase two, one of the soakers that gets mind control, just the sooner you can break them out, the sooner they can get positioned. They're not sort of running to the final position, looking maybe the wrong way, sending a little Azurite fire through the raid. So it'll sort of help that mechanic too, along with what you said, increasing damage. So, these are big early phase nerfs. And so there's a couple here. The remainder ones I haven't hit yet, at least in my progression, but we can talk through them because we know what they are. But Chainbreaker,
the three we just talked about are all phase one, phase two, primarily nerfs. Now we're getting into phase three and then phase four nerfs.
Yep. So the Chainbreaker, which is the ability that chains targets together and then you have to run away to break them, does a lot of raid damage. Now will only target the nearest three allies on mythic difficulty, not four. So there's one less person in the chain to break, which is nice. One less damage on the raid. So
yeah, this is effectively reducing the damage from breaking the chains by 30%. Because you're removing one of the chains. It was three people chained to the tank. So now it's going to be two people chained to the tank. And it probably just means that you immediately snap it with a raid cooldown. Yeah. Or like the next point at which you would have a raid cooldown, you just snap both chains at once. This is super easy for a brewmaster to do, by the way. You like leave a transcend somewhere and you just transcend out. Or if you don't have a good transcendence down, you just, you know, roll.
Yeah.
So
makes it easy. They've also reduced the Incarnation of Torment health by 30%. By 20%. These are the adds, I believe, right?
So this is the adds I was mentioning earlier, where you like stack the torments and then adds spawn from them. And when you do it correctly, you do need damage on them, but there's enough just cleave that it. I got the impression that it wasn't a huge like check to actually get them all. What this probably means more realistically for us is like when someone screws up a torment and drops one out, it's going to be more practical for us to recover from that and continue progressing the boss. Which is good. It's gonna make it just a tiny bit more forgiving.
Yeah. Yeah, which makes those sort of screw ups there easier. And even to be fair, like you may not, like you said, a lot of it was probably incidental AoE or just AoE that already happens on these mobs. And now you wouldn't even have to have anybody to maybe come off
the boss. Or you would have like a marksmanship hunter drop wild spirits on it. And then they would single target the boss and it would just like murder all the adds.
Exactly. So the next one is actually a big one in terms of the final phase nerf. So Diverted Life Shield was reduced by 75% on Mythic difficulty. So Diverted Life Shield is, of course, the heal that happens at the end of the fight going into phase four. And it basically took the jailer, from 10% back up to, was it 16 or 18, something like that, right? I forget the new numbers.
Yeah. So right now, phase four triggers at 15% boss health. And then the shield, diverted life shield, I wanted to say was another like 5 or 10%.
Uh-huh.
So reducing this is taking, you know, we'll say 5-6% off of the boss health. I don't know the exact numbers because honestly, this is a fight that is so dancey. Like it's so like you do the dance the whole way through correctly or you die. So it is very much a fight where we are prepping for the next like minute, 2 minute of the half of the fight for each raid night. And so I have not looked at phase four yet. Gotcha. We are getting into like getting through phase two stuff and then prepping phase three stuff for Friday. And, so I have not looked at phase two stuff.
That's fair. But a 75% reduction essentially means you have 75% less health to chew through in P4, right? The heal will be 75% less. So, you know, you'll end up with, instead of maybe an 8 or 10%, more health to chew through, it's now like 2 or 3% more, right? The heal. Yeah. So it's a big reduction in the actual phase four time. Meaning you probably cut off a mechanic or two, in the overall time.
It's gonna be interesting to see what this does for people's lust timings. The previous change had already pushed people to swap their lusts from being on pull and then in phase four, to being no more on pull, just doing phase four because the boss is shorter. So you would just do a phase four lust. We had started seeing some phase three lusts in order to skip a bunch of the hard mechanics in phase three. What this might do is that a lot more guilds commit to that phase three lust. And use the fact that the life shield is smaller to like lust, like with, you know, 20 seconds until you hit phase four, and use that to push through phase three slightly faster and then carry into phase four and cut off one or two important mechanics at the end of phase four, like the final, I don't remember the actual name of the mechanic, death sentence. That's it. The final set of death sentence, catches, you know, if you cut that off, that reduces a point at which you could wipe. So some kind of weirder lust timing that crosses phase three and phase four, maybe to kind of clean things up.
Yeah. Yeah. So this will, I mean, yeah, I think a couple of people in chat are saying, yeah, it's basically, yeah, phase four becomes, instead of like a little over a minute, I think it is now, it's now, you know, 30, 40 seconds. So, that'll be huge. This change. And then, yeah, the final piece is Chains of Anguish, no longer repositions linked targets when the primary target moves out of range. Which is good for not randomly pulling people around.
Yeah, this is just I understand actually there's a function here, which is the function is not accidentally breaking the chain.
Right.
Like not accidentally breaking the chain at the incorrect time. But in practice, what it meant was just you annoyed your DPS. It also meant that it was like annoyingly difficult to break the chain without using a movement ability. Because you couldn't necessarily just run against it very easily, like, because then your tank doing a slight move would like yank you back, not yank you back to the tank, but yank you back and force you to move again. So this is just a quality of life thing at this point, because the chain length is already enough that in practice you're trying to break it if you're that far away. So
yeah, the neat little change makes it. But a little bit easier, less annoying, we'll say. So, well, cool. So, I mean, that is essentially the large nerfs coming on Tuesday. Like I said, the 21st for us in North America, 22nd for our EU friends. And yeah, I mean, it essentially means, I think, some of the blocker bosses, like the Gluhuvum, like we mentioned, Anduin, and now even Rigelon, right? Should be now dying a lot more, we'll say, for guild stuck on them. So if you're going through that progression, yeah, you should be feeling good.
Yeah. We had a long extended conversation about this in guild yesterday, right? Because it is frustrating to be progressing a boss and then have the nerfs happen and feel like you just wasted a bunch of time progressing a version of the fight that you're not going to have to deal with. And it's actually, I think, even worse for my team. Because if you raid on the weekdays, these hotfix notes came out Friday evening, and you had already done your raid week, right? You had already gone through everything, and it's like, oh, okay, those things we wiped too already, you know, wouldn't have wiped us if it was next week. But for us, the patch notes came out as we were starting raid. Exactly. So it's like going into the jailer and knowing that every time we die to, you know, damage into torment, being something that's just not going to happen next week. It's like, well, it just feels really bad to be progressing a fight that, like, we know we're not killing it this week. We have to play absolutely out of our fucking minds in order to kill it tonight. Like, it's just not even in the realistic realm of possibility. And so we know we're not going to kill it this week. But there's a number of changes that are going to make it, the parts that we're progressing now, easier on Tuesday. Right. So there's an element of like, we're going through these mechanics now, but like, what of what we're learning now is not really going to be applicable on Tuesday, right? Like, we're going to have to probably move healing CDs around because of the torment changes. The mind control change honestly probably doesn't change much. It's going to make it easier, but it's not going to change that much. Like, it's just really like frustrating.
That's why I actually had the exact opposite sort of reaction to them.
I mean, I guess I'll mention, I'm glad it's getting nerfed. I am still 100% glad that it's getting nerfed. It's just frustrating to have it happen mid-prog, and I would rather them just tune the tier lower. Just like tune the tier, the whole tier, every single boss, lower in the first place.
Yeah,
and then we don't have these like huge quantities of nerfs. We get to the boss sooner, maybe we kill it before this round of nerfs, or we don't have to really, we just don't have to deal with, you know, half the bosses in the tier getting a nerf in the middle of our progression, because it happens. We beat the Lords of Dread nerfs, we killed Rigelon in between two sets of nerfs, so those two were actually okay, but like, Jailers had been nerfed twice while we're progressing it, and we've only been progressing it for 2 weeks.
I think the amount of nerfs, I think, is probably the issue. But like, we went through, I mean, I know we went through something very similar with Sylvanas, being like, I think we're probably 100 pulls into Sylvanas when they made sweeping changes to phase one. Yeah. Which I understand the frustration from your specific standpoint, in that you get to see these things and then you have to raid. Meaning, like, to your point, you're not going to learn much, or you'll learn limited amounts if you get like a really good pull.
And it's not like it would be wrong to say that we're not going to learn much, because there's plenty of other mechanics that we still have to get right. Like, we were talking at the start of the show about what we were wiping to, and like, none of these have anything to do with the Runes of Damnation in phase one. It does mean is, if somebody doesn't get in their hole with Rune of Damnation and explodes on the raid as Torments is going off, we're going to lose fewer people.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
But
yeah. But I mean, I think from my point of view, like, I never get frustrated with like nerfs like this. But I get more frustrated by the fact, the frequency of them, right? And that's where I think we and I are on the same page, which is like, I don't ever like, having raided in this game for like 15, 16 years now, right? And going, like, thinking back, and maybe this is recency bias coming in play, but I don't remember a tier that went through this amount of nerfs and like this amount of like fairly large nerfs, right? And I think the biggest reason why, and this is my sort of opinion on this, is that there's no longer like the artificial nerfing of fights based on your character getting more powerful as you clear the raid, right?
Well, like, if you look back at Castle Nathria, I actually, so on prog stats, I have hotfix information. I have not gone through and added it for Sepulcher because I've just been busy.
Yeah.
But for Sanctum and for Castle Nathria, I have hotfix information. And if you look at your guild on there, you can see when a nerf hit during your progression and what nerfs happened pre-progression. And I'm looking through my guild's progression in Castle Nathria right now, and there's not a single nerf that happened during our progression on a fight.
Yeah.
It's all like before we reached a fight or after we reached a fight. And it's because there's just far fewer nerfs. Like, if I pull up Denathrius, there's one hotfix to Denathrius before we killed it, and it was improving the visibility of Crescendo, right? Stone Legion Generals.
Red on red.
Yeah. Stone Legion Generals got three nerfs before we started on it. And, you know, it was like pretty substantially nerfed. One of these nerfs is during the world first race, you know. December 21st 2021 was during the world first race, or 2020, I guess. And then, like, again, Sludge Fist pre-progression, Council of Blood pre-progression, and so, like, Sanctum of Domination also, there's not that many. So there's a couple of Sylvanas hotfixes. One of them was kind of bugged. And then there's the actual set of hotfixes that you were referring to with like the phase one nerfs.
Right.
Well, for most of the other fights in the tier, there's nothing. Like there's a hotfix while we're on Remnant of Ner'zhul. And then there's, that's it. It's Remnant of Ner'zhul. And then it's Sylvanas with the phase one nerfs. This tier, there was a hotfix nerf to at least Halandras, Anduin, and the Jailer while we were progressing on them. And I suspect if I went back and looked at it, there was actually also a hotfix nerf to Zymox and possibly Lyavim. But that one might have been more of a bug fix on Lyavim. And I honestly don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think the point here is that, like, at least the way that I view this is like the nerf, like changing the fights to be slightly easier, I think in my mind is fine if people aren't killing them. Right. Like, I think there's a number that I think Blizzard wants. And if you're a coordinated enough guild and you put in the time on a weekly basis, like you should be able to kill these fights. Right. Maybe not in a week. Yeah. Like Echo or Limit or Liquid Might, right? But like, to be fair, we talked about this. We're 101 days into this tier and there's been 50 kills of the final boss, which seems too low, at least in the US, sorry.
NA kills, yes.
Yeah, which just seems low when in previous tiers, even Denathrius had like over 150, you know, Sylvanas had like 200, I think you mentioned. So in my mind, I think a lot of this stems from two things. Number one, this is again what we talked about going to this tier. It's an overcorrection by Blizzard. The final bosses of Sanctum were too easy. Blizzard said, we'll never make that mistake again. We'll make another mistake, which is on the other end of that spectrum, and we'll sort of go crazy.
And I think it's also, so in Sanctum, they tuned it to basically have Domination Shards be like a nerf to the instance, right? Where it was tuned around you not really having your full domination set. And then as your raid got more and more domination sets, you would basically have a progressive nerf to the raid. What happened in practice is that even guilds like mine just like put extra effort into heroic and getting people their domination sets. So that we just progress the whole thing in the nerfed state.
Exactly, yeah.
Which honestly was fine. Like there were two bosses in Sanctum that were just broken by design. Like Fatescribe and Kel'Thuzad were broken by design.
Right.
Guardian of the First Ones is the only one that actually was really broken by having the whole raid in domination gear.
Right.
But it was fine. Like as a, just a regular ass raider, like not a top, like not a Hall of Fame raider, even just a regular ass raider. It was fine.
Right. And I think that's okay from like a socket perspective, but even if like, I'd even say that like that, like it was tuned around not having like your tier five sockets, right? But like the flip side of that is Sepulcher, which seems to be very much tuned around having four piece and double legendary. Right, but it's tuned around that for Echo and Liquid to have four piece and double legendary.
Yeah.
Not us having four piece and double legendary, because like there's a skill gap there that like, previously, the way that this would work from a progression perspective is the top guilds in the world would kill bosses at a lower item level than everyone else. And as you did, as world 1000 raiders, right? Like our item level would be fairly or significantly higher than the world first guilds as we got to the same fight. So along and with just, sorry.
With the increase in splits, that's actually not even really the case anymore. Like over the course of Shadowlands, it's gotten progressively like the gap between what Limit or Echo kills the boss at and what we kill the boss at has gotten smaller and smaller. Like they killed, Sylvanas last year. I think the world first kill had like two or three raid eye levels lower than what my guild did when we killed it. Just because they did a huge amount of splits and we just like played, but like regular people. But what we had that they didn't was rank five domination sets. And that made a very substantial difference. It doesn't show up if you only look at eye level. There's no anything like that in this tier. Like you were saying, there's your four piece, your double legendary. The raid is the end bosses of the raid are tuned around you having both of those. Mm-hmm. Or are tuned around like Echo having both of those. And there's no power progression after that point, effectively. Like, there's minor optimizations. Maybe you get some better trinkets, or you bump the eye level on one of your tier pieces from, like, LFR to Mythic, right?
Right.
But there's no further power progression.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think the, like, with splits, and then also with, like, the availability of just free gear from, like, your box or, like, PvP or just chain running Mythic Plus, right? Like, there's enough external sources of gear from a raid perspective that you don't actually have to kill raid bosses. You have the item level to then progress, right? So I think that's sort of the what we're seeing. And I wonder if this continues as we move forward into, like, 10.0, and that, like, if Blizzard's going to keep the fights, that keep the sort of methodology the same, or the sort of idea the same of saying, look, we want you to have these sets of items. They have the most power, it comes from them. They don't really upgrade over the course of a fight, like, because tier sets, you're not going to upgrade your, like, unless they put in a system that's like Shards of Domination, where you can rank up your tier set bonus. Like, you Please basically don't. Are going to get, yeah, don't. But you're going to get your four piece, and you're going to try and kill all the end bosses, which is, like, then we're, I think we're going to, if that's sort of the mentality or sort of the thought process with Blizzard, we're going to continue to see nerfs like this, right? Like, yeah, this is going to be, like, a common thing where, like, you essentially wait till EJ is on the boss you're on, or maybe one boss behind you, sorry, Elitist Jerks. And then you'll see nerfs come in. By the way, Elitist Jerks just killed, I think, Lords of Dread. So that's how we get Rigelon and Jailer.
So it's actually very interesting because the first tier of this expansion, Castle Nathriad, did not have much in the way of external power systems. Like, it was basically just gear.
Yep.
You had your Soulbind, but the Soulbind power was front-loaded, so you had it up at, like, at the start of the tier. And from there, it was just eye level. It was just gear. And it didn't really get a lot of nerfs in the same way that we are getting right now, in much the same situation of it just being gear, right?
Right.
It's really just a tuning philosophy difference, I think. Like, they tuned Sepulchre higher in really meaningful ways. They had a number of mechanics, unlike Castle Nathria, they had a number of mechanics that were very much, you know, like, you do this or your whole raid dies.
Yeah, pass fail.
And that's, like, Rigelon, Anduin, Holandris, Lyavim, and the Jailer all have these kind of pass fail mechanics, which is a lot. Like, if you look at Castle Nathria, the pass fail mechanics are, like, Sludge Fist and Denathrius a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could argue Stone Legion generals with this, the puddle soaks, as you get into but I mean, those are your final three bosses, which makes sense.
And even, like, the Denathrius one is, like, a little bit of cheaty because it's not really pass fail. It's like, if you don't kill your ad on the platform, then you're kind of screwed. But it's a very different kind of pass fail from like Lyavim, which is, you know, potentially boss number four in the instance, being this thing where, like, if you as an individual screw up this mechanic one time, four people die.
Yeah.
And then your raid effectively is just dead. Like, there's not much difference between it killing four people and it killing 20.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, the extensiveness of the nerfs, just, I think it just depends on how they hit, right? Like, the Holandra stuff sucked, I think, just because the way that that was nerfed essentially trivialized that fight, right? Which is sucks because you see the difficulty in it. And, like, at the end of the day, like, I'll be honest with you, the only reason I raid is because I want mounts from the last boss, right? So, like, I have to get through these fights anyway. But it'd be nice if they weren't, like, they didn't go from, like, super, super difficult, lots of coordination, finally getting on the same page with your guild of, like, or your team, right, of doing the fight. And then, like, the next day it's like, oh, we just ignore this thing and blast. And
yeah,
like, that sucks. But
it also, like, so there are fights this tier that I would have liked the ability to progress the unnerfed version, or, like, a very lightly nerfed version, like Holandris. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to do a very lightly nerfed version instead of the version we ended up doing. Anduin, you can nerf as much as you want. Like, I don't care. But Halandris, I would have liked to do the unnerfed version, but it's very much a, like, I individually, like, I would have enjoyed doing progression on, like, one of these bosses as it was. But I would not like doing the whole tier of unnerfed bosses, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely understand why they're doing this, but I also, it's very, like, I don't have the ability to pick and choose which things, which nerfs we get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the hope for me, though, is that, like, I feel like they, like, Blizzard needs to maybe take, like, I would feel better about this if Blizzard looked at what Echo and Limit did. Like, give the top 10 in the world these fights unnerfed, right? Like, give them whatever final boss they want to do or whatever final form they want to give them, right? But then immediately after, like, a certain number of guilds kill it, have a set of nerfs ready that you just blanket hit the instance with, right? And that way, like, the only reason I say maybe do it that way is that at that point, you then don't run into these situations like we get on Halandris, where it's like, great, we, like, finally get to Halandris, and it's hard for the week or two we're on it, and now it's all of a sudden it's easy. I think we also did this in Sanctum. We hit Painsmith right before the nerfs to, like, you know, not needing to take the Warlock Gate and things like that. We had done a night or two on Painsmith in that sort of unnerfed version. And so I think, to me, if they know, they can tell probably up front, Blizzard can, about, like, the difficulty of where guilds sit after maybe 10 or so have killed it. And at that point, hit this instance with the large, like, maybe not all of your nerfs, but the larger ones, what you know you're going to do, and then go from there, which I think might be maybe a better than this slow trickle of, like,
yeah,
are we going to get the nerfs this week?
I think that there's two things that, so I think, just on a fundamental level, they went too heavy on the, like, raid coordination mechanics this tier. There's a lot of, like, there's not really a Painsmith kind of thing where it's just personal responsibility. And if you die, you die. And if too many people die, then you wipe, right? Which is, that's how fights work. If too many people die, you wipe. But you can deal with, like, one person eating spikes or getting hit by a ball or walking off the edge, as long as they don't happen to do it with the hammer.
Yeah.
Exactly. But those things have, like, there's no way to get around nerfing those things. Like, there's not really a corruption or a Azerite power or artifact power or, you know, shards of domination ranks. Like, none of those things nerf the coordination mechanics. Right. And we do see this if you look back at, like, how long people took to kill a boss like Fatescribe in Sanctum, which is a coordination boss, even if it was broken, right? You still had to do the rings. And it didn't, like, become as easy for lower ranked guilds as Guardian did. That was just a, you know, damage check, right? Like, that coordination thing, there, you can't just bump the numbers up and remove the difficulty. I wouldn't mind seeing just an explicit ICC style, like, every week after a certain point, the raid gets 1-2, I think 5% is probably too high, but, like, 1-2% easier.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, when we're hitting the boss, we know going in that it's going to be the first week that we're there, it's going to be, we'll say, like, 10% easier than it was on the first kill. Right. And we know that the next week it's going to be 12%, and the week after that it's going to be 14%. So realistically, we're probably killing it at 16%. And that's a little bit more palatable, I think, for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I it's funny. I think as much as that is such an inelegant solution, it might be the one that makes
it's a very pragmatic sense. One.
Yeah.
It is also, like, we had this in Legion and in BFA in a more subtle way that people complained about endlessly, but that's what artifact power did. Yeah. Every week you would get an artifact power rank, and it would be, you know, 0.5% DPS once you got, like, deep in your artifact power, right? And you were just getting the end trait in Antorus, like, you know, 0.5% DPS is just a bunch of versatility. You know, 0.5%, 1%, whatever it was for your spec, you were every week just getting a slight nerf to whatever you were working on. Same thing with BFA. Corruption kind of went a little bit crazy with it because slightly it ended up being more like a 5 or 10% nerf some weeks, depending on what unlocked and what corruption you got dropped. And but
I think that's what they have to sort of balance too, is that sort of, is there any sort of power progression over the course of a tier that you can insert into the tier, or like, is the expectation before you're even halfway through a tier, you're at max power, and then we'll see more nerfs like this, right? Like, we've extended since Helandris. Like, we have killed Helandris one time, which is, that's what, the sixth boss in the instance, or seventh boss in the instance, right?
Seventh boss. Anduin's number 8.
Which is crazy that you kill Anduin, a boss that drops tier once, Raglan, a boss that drops tier once, and Lord Strahd that drops tier once, right? Like,
and we killed all of those bosses after everybody in the raid had 4-set.
And to be fair, after some people on my raid had mythic 4-set, right? Because like the catalyst, the creation catalyst is there. So I don't know. I mean, that's sort of maybe me being old again in terms of like, it might, like the stacking buff might be cool. The other thing that might be cool is just bringing back MOP style upgrades to gear, where like each piece of gear gets 2 upgrades and you funnel valor into it.
Yeah.
And you get 6 item level. You
make the raid drop valor.
Make the raid drop valor. Like, and I think something like that, like something that doesn't require like massive changes like this, because a couple things happen too. Like when you see these changes, like strats change. Like we had to reprogress Kel'Thuzad after our first kill, which was unfun. Right. And like, I think that's sort of the other thing, is that like a lot of times these changes necessitate making a strat change, which is always just slightly frustrating, right? After you haven't killed something. And also, I mean, doing something like that incentivizes you not to just extend for like the final 5 bosses of a tier.
I mean, we still would, because we've done that for as long as I've been raiding in the 2-night guild. That's just how it works. You just don't have time. Like, raid time is the premium thing. So you reach a point where you just extend. It's varied from tier to tier, where there's like, in Sanctum, we extended once we reached Painsmith. But at that point, we had full set, like domination sets, and it was just ranking them up, and you could get the currency for ranking them up from heroic, right? And then in Castle Nathria, we extended after we killed Council of Blood, I think.
Early, I think we killed Sludgefist a handful of times, and then extended on generals or whatever, still need generals. But it's such a weird concept to me too, because it's fairly like the extension stuff only started happening is like with, like for us at least, I think it's like Legion, right? And KJ, Kil'jaeden, was like the first fight I remember like extending, which made sense because it was really difficult. Like, we killed Fallen Avatar once and then basically rammed our heads into KJ for the next couple of weeks. But my personal opinion is I'm fine with extending on a final boss, right? Like, kill the second to last boss once, extend on the final boss. I think that makes sense. It just sucks. It just fucking sucks to start in the middle of an instance and just know literally like, you don't get a raid night to take off. Like, it's literally every raid night from here on out is progression. And like, which I think, at least for us, like for me personally, like I need those nights where we just smash. You just like, you just go through, you kill like whatever, Eye of the Jailer.
You kill Skolex for the 17th time. And
And like, you don't have to think, you're just sort of like messing around and like maybe like 10 people die, but like you still pull through and kill it right at the end. You know what I mean? Like, I think you need that sometimes just from like a mental perspective, but I mean, if they're going to not allow or not add a bunch of power progression while you have to do a tier, then like, I think we're going to see more stuff like this, because they just don't have, like, Blizzard doesn't have like a competitive mode versus a non-competitive mode, right? Like, Destiny 2, I think, does it the best, where like you're essentially gear capped for 24 hours after a raid releases, and then they let that cap go and you can rank up whatever you want. Now, it's only 24 hours, different types of games, right? But like, there's maybe something there that Blizzard can iterate on.
So Adore in chat says, I think this is just a general problem of WoW character progression is very poor and limited. And I think WoW is at an unhappy middle, right? It's in this uncanny valley of having the progression be powerful enough that it is invalidating some of the tuning choices that they make. Like, they can't tune around the state that you're in before you get the gear, because then with the gear, you will absolutely destroy everything in your path.
Yeah.
But then they also, like, they can't tune around the state after you get the gear, because, or they can't, like, reliably predict where that point's going to be as well, because of the, just the complexity of the gear and how powerful a lot of it is. And that is a part of the issue with how powerful tier sets were this year, where like they were so, so good. You know, things are tuned around you having the really good tier sets. And so that means without the really good tier sets, you know, you're hosed. And also that, like, the tier sets that do rely on you playing well, like the ones that scale with your player skill, like the Brewmaster one doesn't. It just doesn't. It does not care how good you are. You push Keg Smash on cooldown and you're fine.
Yeah.
But then other ones, like the Fire Mage one, is more skill intensive. It allows you to execute your combustions better, but you still, it's on you to take advantage of that and really get the full value from it. So even though in sim DPS we might be, you know, over geared for a fight, in practice, while you're like doing a fight, you're not hitting that sim DPS in virtually any scenario. And I think, like, Destiny, like you said, it is tuned effectively around the pre-raid light level. Like, you can kill it with the pre-raid light level, because that's literally what competitive mode for that first day does. And then in Final Fantasy, kind of the other way, the gearing is so simplified. Like, it's just stats on gear. It's just eye level that, you know, and it's also time-gated, so they know how much you'll have the first week. That they can do a very, very good job of tuning it, because everything is so streamlined that there's no room really for them to make a tuning mistake.
Yeah.
And then you have like WoW, where the gearing system is just so complicated, that there's tons of room for them to make a tuning mistake, like what happened in Sanctum of Domination.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think it's complicated, and there's so much of it, and it comes from so many sources that are just not the raid fights, that like,
yeah,
the balance there is so tough. I'd say, like, with the fact that like you have your vault, which I think vault's a really cool thing, but then it also introduces this complexity and saying like us, like I have mythic four piece, having never killed a boss after Halandras. Like, I didn't kill Anduin, I didn't kill Rygalon, didn't vault, kill Lords of Dread. Like,
the first vault of the tier, I got mythic Lords of Dread shoulders in my box on my paladin.
Yeah, which didn't get anything. which is awesome in terms of like, cool, like I get free gear, and like there's something to engage me to play the game in the middle of the week if I don't want to just raid log. But at the same time, it introduces this sort of issue of like, you don't then you don't progress your power over the course of actually killing the bosses.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think that that is like part of the reason that Castanathria was tuned so well, is because they didn't have these complex systems for the gear. Like, there was no Shards of Domination, there was no tier sets in double legendaries. We had the first round of legendaries, which there were definitely tuning issues with, and the Covenant abilities that there were also tuning issues with. But by and large, gear was just gear. And it was relatively, like, they know how to tune around just gear. They've done that forever.
Yep. Yeah,
it's, no, it's for the sure. Other systems that throw the wrench in the works.
Exactly.
But speaking of games with vendors, we were going to talk a little bit about Faded and the tuning on that. But really, I think a lot of the discussion about the tuning on that is kind of like, a lot of our thoughts are maybe out the window with the recent round of hotfixes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And we're sort of at time, but yeah, I think, I mean, the only point I was going to make, and this will be sort of the quick thing, is that my only hope really, and this is sort of where I was going to take our conversation, is that I hope they don't make us reprogress Castle Nathria and Sanctum going back and doing it on a Faded raid week. That's my, I don't care about the tuning. Yes. I mean, wherever it lands, it could be slightly more difficult. Like, I'm fine wiping. Like, if I have to do Denathrius again and I wipe 10 or 15 times to get a kill, perfectly okay with that. Don't make me wipe 50, 60 times to Denathrius again, because I have to relearn it, right? Similarly, like, yeah. Sylvanas, I don't want to have to wipe the Sylvanas 50, 60 times. So I think in general, like, that was my only comment. Really, what most of what I wanted to get out was just, like, I hope from a tuning perspective, when we have to go back and do this faded stuff, that it's, like, to be fair, like, it's heroic level. Like, Mythic is heroic in terms of its difficulty if we're going back to the old raids. Like, that's my hope. I don't know. I don't know where it'll fall, but...
Yeah, I think, like, a heroic plus would be good for me. Like, end boss here. Yeah. Like, if the first few bosses are, like, early... Or, like, late heroic bosses in difficulty, yeah, and the end bosses are, like, you know... They're going to be end bosses still in complexity, but then in terms of tuning, be more like mid-tier bosses. I think that'll be the sweet spot, because that's going to be effectively what it is on the normal farm. Like, when, right, when you're in deep in farm, that's what happens. You just gear things to the point that the end-tier bosses are tuned like mid-tier bosses between the nerfs and whatever power progression.
Exactly.
And that's fine. Like, that... I didn't mind farming Sanctum when that was the case. You know, when we could comfortably meet the DPS check on Sylvanas, even with a couple people dead, it was fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think it's going to be very strange for us, depending on when Season 4 arrives. Like, if it arrives just a few weeks after we've completed progression.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We've already talked about, we're taking essentially 2 weeks off after progression, like two full weeks of, like, no coordinated guild stuff. So if Season 4 hits at that point, like, it is what it is. But yeah.
Yeah. We have, we do, like, a post progression survey for the team. And one of the things that's going to be on it is, I think, when do you want to start Season 4 stuff?
Yeah.
And it's going to, like, because I don't think the question is if. I think the question is when. Because I think everybody's going to be kind of not ready to reprogress Season 4, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's not that bad, they're just not going to want to be in that progression mindset for bosses that some of them actually haven't killed before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if it lands 2 weeks after our break post-progression, it's going to be, they're just not going to want to do it.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, yeah. I mean, I think, too, like, that we'll have to balance it, because, like, I talked to a couple people in my guild, and they're worried, too. Like, are we still going to kill, like, the Jailer?
Right.
And I was like...
So I think, like, one of the options is, like, I think no matter what, we're going back for Jailer mounts in...
Yeah, yeah, that's what, yeah, I told
them. During Season 4, we're going back for Jailer mounts. Like, that's just part of our raid week. It's going to be going and getting those mounts. We have, like, a couple people that need Sylvanas mounts, but we can get those from the Season 4 version of the raid.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll probably be how we get those, because we only need, like, three. And that's two clears of Sanctum, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. It's also, one of the things about this, Season 4 removes the ability to get Cutting Edge Sepulchre.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, there's a very real chance that, like, my raid team gets... US, you know, 140 or lower, which our lowest before that had been like 181 in Nyalotha, and we were like 220 in Sanctum because of just a combination of roster fiesta in general, like, fuckery.
Yeah. Like,
140. Are they good. Really going to, like, a month after that, close CE?
That's, yeah, which is crazy, yeah.
But I don't know what else they do, honestly. So, yeah. We did have one question. Do you want to take the time to go through this question? I know we're slightly over time.
Yeah, we'll hit it real quick, because I think I can do this maybe fairly quickly. So, sorry, wrap it up. So, typically, we do a Q&A session. We haven't lately, because people don't ask questions. You can ask us questions. We'll ask.
Or they ask in chat, and we just answer it live.
Yeah, that's true. We do that, too. But we did get a question into the podcast this week. From an individual by the name of Iron, I think is what I don't know if that's your whole name, but Iron. Basically, Iron asks, how far behind is doing, and this is a Mistweaver specific question, but they ask, how far behind is doing the single Tiger Palm, then Blackout Kick versus three Tiger Palms, then Blackout Kick DPS-wise? Is it sizable or is it something minimal? So what they're basically asking is, essentially Mistweaver has two sort of quote unquote DPS rotations that have been thrown around over the years. One is doing a single Tiger Palm and then Blackout Kick. Whenever you Tiger Palm as a Mistweaver, you get a stack of Teachings of the Monastery, which makes your next Blackout Kick hit an additional time. So if you do one Tiger Palm, you get one stack. That means next time you hit Blackout Kick, it'll hit twice. The one you cast and then the one from the stack. And then if you do three Tiger Palms, because the buff stacks up to three, you'll get four Blackout Kicks at the end of it, right? The idea is that from a strictly DPS perspective, the reason you would do a single TP versus Blackout Kick is what you're trying to do is get a reset of Rising Sun Kick early. Because every time you Blackout Kick, you have a chance to reset Rising Sun Kick. And so you do that single Blackout Kick and, you know, Tiger Palm, Blackout Kick, Tiger Palm, Blackout Kick to try and trigger a reset early so you can Rising Sun Kick earlier than you typically would. There's actually no statistical difference or probability difference between the two rotations in terms of your Rising Sun Kick resets, because it's actually the same chance across all those standard GCDs. So that's sort of why you do one versus the other. In terms of DPS, to be fair, it's minimal, right? Like, generally speaking, you're not playing Mistweaver to do max DPS. So you basically will generally pick the rotation that makes sense for what you're doing. If you're just sitting there hitting the boss, nothing else to do, you probably do one Tiger Palm Blackout Kick because you want that Rising Sun Kick reset earlier. But in actual practice, what ends up happening is like you will be hitting a boss, have to cast a heal. Your Rising Sun Kick is probably on like 3 second cooldown, so you don't want to use a Blackout Kick just then. So maybe you Tiger Palm two more times and you're at three stacks anyway. Rising Sun Kick, try and get a big reset. There's really not a rotation you can sit and just do because of, as a healer, things come it's in, bosses reactive. Move. Yeah. So in a general perspective, I think sim-wise, when we did sims a couple, like maybe an expansion or two ago, they're actually fairly similar in terms of overall damage. I think the three stack was actually slightly higher is because you get an extra Tiger Palm in there over the course of your rotation. But I mean, to be fair, it's not like you're not losing a ton of damage by doing one over the other. It's almost negligible at the end of the day. So I would say, to be fair, single TP Blackout Kick is what I always recommend people to do. It gets that Rising Sun Kick reset that much sooner. And then also it puts you in a position where if you need to do an extra TPs, you're not, number one, not wasting them. And number two, you have that flexibility in terms of like, hey, I can only stack to two this time just because of the way like other stuff was happening in the fight. And then I'll Blackout Kick right after that. And that's okay. Yeah, there's no real true full rotation you want to do. And to be fair, the DPS is probably minor at best. It's actually number one, using your available GCDs more correctly. Basically, if you have a free one, DPSing is probably the better mindset to get into. And regardless of what that DPS button is, like if it's Tiger Palm, if it's a Blackout Kick, if it's Rising Sun Kick, just use something when you have those free GCDs versus trying to do the perfect DPS rotation as a healer. Never works out well.
I mean, this applies to a lot of specs. Always be casting. Like if you have a GCD that nothing is going on, and like that's a resource, you want to use all of your resources. Time is one of them. Mm-hmm. There are specs that don't push something every GCD because they're limited by other resources. You know, a Windwalker, you might run into a situation where you don't have any chi and you also don't have enough energy to press Tiger Paw. Mm-hmm. And that happens. But you're limited by your other resources. When you're not, like in this case, you need to be spending your time effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's for sure. So, no, I would say, you know, yeah, definitely always be casting, do it that way. And then, yeah, it'll work itself out. So,
yeah.
Cool. And that's all the questions I think we had for this week, though. And really all the time. So. You're going to be late.
It'll be fine. So that is gonna bring us to the end of our show today. Thank you all for watching and or listening. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support it and the other work that we do over on the Peak of Serenity, you can do that at our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, we would invite you to, sorry, I got distracted by an animated emoji in Twitch chat. We would invite you to come and hang out in the Discord, which it sounds like in approximately 23 minutes is going to be filled with F1 chat across multiple lounges.
Heck yeah.
But it is also just a good place to come and hang out and get your questions answered. But that is it for the show today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.